Hunter, real one. So if I could ask you, first of all, Lady Hunter, to tell me, I know you were a very small child in Germany before the war started, but do you remember anything at all?
I don't remember when the war started. I was, barely 3 years old. It's difficult to really know what happened when I was a child. I mean, I have no idea. But I knew something was going on. But as it progressed, say, in 1940, my father had to go, to be a soldier. You know, he had to... How do you say this?
He was conscripted, was he? Yeah. Yes.
I was going to say it in German.
That doesn't matter.
And I remember we used to go to a station called Braunschweig and to see my father off. And my mother spoke to him. And she was in tears. And we knew then something really was happening. That was in 1940.
Whereabouts were you living?
We were living in a small town called Hamelin, the pipe of Hamelin, if that makes sense. And that's where I grew up. And in fact, that is, there's still the family home.
Could you tell me something about your family? You know, do you, your grandparents, for instance?
Well, I never knew my grandfather. He died in the First World War. He was killed 3 weeks before the war ended. But my grandmother, she lived in Hanover. My mother was an only child. Grandparents on my father's side, they were both killed by accidents when my father was 11 years old, so I don't know anything about that side of the family. I know about my great-great-grandpa, father. He was a hotelier in Osnabrück, where incidentally I was born. And that hotel is still in family hands, so there's a little bit of sort of family history there. But my grandmother, on the mother's side, I remember very well, because she was a very strong sort of woman, and she made a great impression on me. And I used to go and visit her in Hanover, but she unfortunately was born dead. And I guess that must have been 42, 43. And she then came to live with us in Hamelin. Well, that's about it. My family, my immediate family, I have two sisters and a brother. My eldest sister was born in 1933. I'm number two. My younger sister was in 1939. And my brother was born in 43.
What did your father do before the war? You mean?
Before the war. My father was a businessman. He and his cousin, his cousin from Osnabrück, started a business together in Hamelin, and they had wallpaper and floor coverings and that sort of thing. And they worked together. My father was a managing director, and the other one was the owner, my uncle was the owner. But then he was also in the reserve police force, and as such, he was then conscripted to go to Russia, and he was in Ukraine. And unfortunately, he never talked about his experiences. And my father died in 1968 when he was 64. So, you know, there hasn't been a lot of history as far as, you know, he's concerned. Oh, as far as he's concerned, fine, but not as far as I'm concerned. I don't know about his history. And after Russia, he went to Italy, and he was in Upper Italy. He was fighting, if you want to call it fighting, the partisans in Upper Italy. He was near Ligada, near Stresa, and places like that. And he did talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. He was taken prisoner by the Americans in Asia in 1944. And, no, it must have been early 45. And we didn't know where he was for about a year. And through some extraordinary coincidence, we got a message. If I remember this rightly, a truck full of prisoners of war, German prisoners of war, went through the town of Hamelin, and one of his comrades knew that my father was, you know, his family was living in Hamelin. He dropped a note from the truck to to say he was alive. So that was my dad.
Rather, yes. Now, so you were in Hamelin for all the war, were you?
Yes,
did you say this?
War, yes.
Yes. What sort? Could you describe the town? How big it was?
The town is, I think, in those days it had about 50,000 inhabitants. It is a very old town. It's a walled city, or used to be a walled city, and there are one or two, no, there's one old tower still standing, and they rebuilt another one, which was in Rome. It is a 12th century city, and there were many, many 12th century houses. And in later years, they made a pedestrian zone of the whole of the, what we call the Innenstadt, the old town, and preserved all these old houses. Some of them had to be removed because they were really very, you know, you couldn't live in them anymore, you know. But what they used to do with some of them, they gutted them and left the outside and redid all the carvings, you know, on the wooden carvings on the frontage. And they look like an old house with a wonderful new interior, you see. And it's the most beautiful little city, really is. And it has a little part of the River Weser, as in Browning's poem. And it's a lovely little place, it really is. But unfortunately, in the last days of the war, the little town of Hamelin decided it could defend itself against the mighty Americans, and they blew up the lovely old bridge across the River Weser. And the result was there was a terrible fire from the other side, which damaged one of the most precious little monuments in Hamelin called Der Bäckerscharren. It was an old, it wasn't a bakery itself, but it was like a 12th century stand where you sold bread. And part of the old church, the Marktkirche, that was destroyed as well. But the Marktkirche was rebuilt later on.
So here you were then, you know, and as you say, vaguely remembering the outbreak of war, but in 1940, with your father being sent off, conscripted, you would then have been four. Is that right?
Four, yes.
Yes, getting your first memories.
That's right. And my first memory was that my father was away and my mother had to cope with three children, because my brother wasn't born then. With three children in a flat. We used to live in a flat, it was a three-family house, really. And the owner used to live above, and the mother of the owner was above that. And we had cellars, which were made into, like, bunkers. You know, we used to go down there, like an air raid shelter. And we used to spend, every time the alarm rang, we used to go down into the cellar. Funnily enough, Hamelin is a small town, and there wasn't very much industry to, you know, bomb. I mean, there was hardly anything. But we always said they're bombing Hanover, and on the way back, they have a few bombs left, and they dropped them on Hamelin. So once the real bombing started, I suppose it must have been about 42, 43, and that's when it really started. We spent a lot of time in the cellars, and sometimes we went into the woods. You know, this was after my brother was born in 43, when it really got going. And we spent the nights with a pram, with all the little children and other people we spent in the woods. And, of course, we knew something was wrong, you know, definitely very wrong with the regime. We didn't know about Jews, you see. We didn't. There was one Jewish family living at the end of our road, and they had sort of disappeared, and we were more or less told that they have gone to safety somewhere. But of course, knowing now, they didn't, you know, I'm sure they were. They never returned. But My mother was a fairly, well, she was a very brave woman. And she made a couple of remarks, just to give you the idea of what it was like living in Germany. There weren't any men at all in the whole road, and they were all women and children, because all the men had gone. We had a couple of barracks where there were soldiers, but, you know, that was it, and we hardly ever saw them. But my mother, once or twice, when she'd had enough, you know, with all these children, made a remark against the regime, and she was told that if she opens her mouth again, she might regret it, you know, which meant they either, you know, take her away or do something, you know. And this was only, you know, people used to denounce each other. Well, we didn't, thank God, you know, my mother would never do that. But there were people who did, you know, who sort of said, well, you know, she did that and she talked about it. So basically, you know, you just didn't open your mouth. You know, you just kept very, very quiet. So.
Yes, I was going to ask you earlier, you know, with Hamelin, was it an important Nazi centre, you know, being in its geographic position, as you say, fairly near to Hamburg, really, is that right?
Hanover.
Hanover, well, rather,
it was,
yes.
It was the biggest city. There was a core of Nazi organisers in the town, definitely. And people, you know, were asked to join the Nazi Party. You see, I don't think that my mother ever joined. I don't know, but I don't think she did. I would have known about that.
Was pressure put on your father before the war?
Well, my father had to be a member of the Nazi Party, naturally. You know, he was a reserve policeman, and he had to be a member. And you know, I remember small snatches. I don't know what year it was, but I must have been quite small. And people were quite proud. I think I may have been about 5 or 6. They were quite proud to, you know, when the soldiers went to the front, they marched through the streets and we gave them flowers and you know, it was like a folks fest, you know, something like that. And I also remember at school, when I went to school, we had to, of course, say Heil Hitler every morning. And we had to sing a patriotic song, which was about a comrade who was felled by the friend's side. And I remember as a child, I mean, six years old or so, it really moved me to tears. I thought it was the most terrible thing to see your friend being killed next to you, you know. I remember this song very well.
You couldn't, I suppose, I couldn't ask you to sing it.
It was like, ich hatte einen Kameraden. I can't remember the words, but it was like that. Nein, besseren hast du nicht. Let me think. The melody I remember, but it was just he stood by my side, and then suddenly he was shot dead, you know. And I thought this was terrible as a child, you know. I really thought it was awful. Anyway, that I remember. I mean, as you said before, it was all snitches of things, you know.
Well, could you tell me about your education? What age did you go to school in Germany?
I went to school at the age of 6. To primary school, and well, we missed a lot of school because once it began, we had to take something like the 11 plus we had to take examination to get into a higher education, like it's what's called the Mittelschule, it's like a secondary grammar school, something like that. And I remember there were 10 of out of my class, and I was one of two who passed, and my reward for passing was a glass of Morello cherries. You know, I never forget that. A friend of my mother's came with this glass of Morello cherries, which was a rarity. We had no fruit, you know. Anyway, that was when I was 11, so it must have been about 6, 47. Yeah. So, anyway, but what I was going to say to you about that people used to denounce each other. I remember there was one man who came through our road once a week. And to me as a child, I still see he was a man and he was going to protect us and he was, you know, this was great. And long after the war, I was told that he was Gestapo. And he was the guy who used to go around listening. And in fact, my mum told me later that he was the guy who told her to be quiet. I don't know whether he took pity on us because, you know, here we're four small children. And by that time, my grandmother had been born out in Hanover, and she was living with us, and she was quite ill. And my grandmother's sister was also living with us. So we had a two-bedroom flat, and we all lived in this two-bedroom flat. I had to sleep in one bed with my sister, my younger sister, one each end. I can't remember where everybody else slept, but we did all sleep in this small flat.
And daily life, you know, do you remember details of your daily life as the war went on and the sort of bombing was, you know, fairly consistent?
Yes. We had a system in Germany where young women were detailed to families with many children. And they were called Pflichtjahrmädchen, which means they had to do a duty year of helping out with family, like, you know, large families. And we had several of those. And they were all wonderful. I mean, they were a bit like nannies, I suppose, but, I mean, they weren't trained. But they did help in the house, they helped with the children, and... of course, once the bombing started, you know, they had to go home to their own houses, because I remember one day a girl called Hannelore, she was looking after us, and we heard that her part of the town had been bombed. So we all of us, including children, went to find out whether her house was still standing. And this is another one of the sort of impressions I had. I can't remember which year it was, but I wasn't very old. And we walked up the hill. She lived on the top of the hill in a little sort of, they call it the Siedlung, where, you know, one house is next to one another. It's a sort of like a little district, a special district. And it was bombed, but her house was still standing. But on the way there, I shall never forget, I saw a leg sticking out from underneath the mattress, and it was a body. And that was the first time ever I saw a body, or part of a body, you know, and I never forget that. That was terrible. And we went back home and just carried on. But in daily life, there was no food.
Was there a rationing system in Germany?
After the war, no, there was just nothing. My grandmother was a genius in doing things, and we used to have onions for something. I mean, you used to have some things. You could, you know, buy some things, but sweets, I remember sweets as one of the staple diets, and I hate sweets to this day. And barley soup. We got barley, as we used to do. And my grandmother used to make something called Grießschmalz, which was a most awful concoction out of fried onion, water, and semolina. And it all went sort of thick and horrible. We used to have that on our bread. There was horse meat once a week, because my mum had a friend who was a horse butcher, and we had to queue for that, of course. And that was, I mean, once a week we had meat. And there's a wonderful episode when, at the end of our road, there was a shoe factory, and opposite was a bakery, a wholesale grocer, and a stay whole, stay stationer. And one day, oh, that's it, I must explain that the factory was filled with Polish prisoners, male and female. And in fact, some of these Polish prisoners, I'll tell you the story later, came to help us out, because when the bombs fell, all our windows were broken. So they helped us to put wood or cardboard on our windows and that sort of thing. But anyway, a bomb fell one day at the end of our street. And when it was all over, we were in the cellar, and when it was all over, because our windows were broken again, we came up and we looked outside after the all clear had gone, and we saw this trail of people going from the shoe factory over to the ruined or half-ruined bakery, grocery, or whatever. And we thought, well, that's strange, what's going on there? And they had sacks on their backs as well. So my mother got the pram, and we all went down there. And what was it? It was half, I mean, it wasn't totally destroyed. I mean, there was a rubble all over the place. And the bakery was only sort of half destroyed. And people were sort of knee-deep in oil and flour and stuff which we didn't have, you know. So off we went, and I remember we had the pram full of pudding powder, you know, like custard powder. My mother managed to get a whole loaf of cheese, oil, we had some oil, and everything was brought home by my mother. I stayed behind, because my grandmother's sister was still rummaging about, and she was a very large lady, very large. And she suddenly appeared with this bucket of candy sugar. Do you know the sort of crystal sugar, these blocks of sugar? And the alarm went. And we were on the top of a ramp, you know, it was sort of like a delivery ramp. And I said, come on, we have to go into the cellar. And I knew there was a bunker just next to this, in fact, quite a deep bunker. It was my favorite because you didn't hear the planes, you know. And I used to go there sometimes with other friends, but my mother didn't like that. Anyway, so I said, come on, we have to get down this ramp. And she couldn't get down the ramp. She was sitting on this bucket of candy. Actually, it was hilarious when you think about it. You know, there's a huge lady sitting on this bucket, and I said, for goodness sake, you have to come down this ramp. Anyway, I managed to get her down somehow. I can't remember how, but I did. And we went into the bunker, and we sat it out, and the lid line was gone, and off we went. But anyway, we went home with this bucket of candy. And then we started counting the loot, which was great. You know, we hadn't had cheese for years, you know. And the next day, some of the neighbors didn't get what we had. Some of them had more. And we thought we'd barter, everybody would barter. But unfortunately, we had to give it all back. I mean, my mother managed to cut into the cheese and pinch a bit and say, well, I'm sorry we've eaten it, you know. I wish we hadn't. But anyway, we had to give it all back because it was a penalty. And, you know, you get shot if you don't do this. And I mean, it was a warning. We didn't know whether it was for real or not. But definitely had to give it back. And I remember my mother put in the pram full of custard powder and various other things, and she kept some of the things because, you know, we had nothing to eat. And but it was, you know, there were some funny moments, you know, even in a bunker, you know. And it was, you know.
This bartering, you know, which you were hoping to do with your supplies, was there a black market during the war?
Oh.
No, this is during the wartime.
Definitely. Mm. Now, but you see, it was fascinating. My grandmother had quite a bit of jewellery, and it was all bartered for sort of fruit, eggs, butter when she could, but of course it was all against the law, you know, you had to be very careful. And I remember once, that must have been after the war, that was just after the war, when the barracks were full of prisoners, I can't remember what nationality they were. And we used to meet. And do you know the straps underneath the beds to hold the mattress? They were sort of made of yarn, some sort of yarn. We used to barter those, and my grandmother used to unravel them and make vests and socks and stuff out of them, you see. But that was after the war. That was after the war. But during the war, no, I don't. I'm sure there was the black market, but I don't know how we got food. I mean,
it's very interesting you saying that there was no rationing system. You didn't have books of coupons.
That came after. That came after the, after 45. You know, we had to we had coupons, but not for very long. I understand that in Britain it went on much, much longer than it did in Germany. Of course, we had to queue, and, you know. But you see, after the what they used to call the Umschwung, when it was, I think, in 47, I'm not sure exactly of the year, but every member of the family started with 40 marks. Because the money, I mean, Reichsmark didn't exist anymore. And every child, every man and woman got 40 marks and started with this 40 marks. But again, that was after the war, you see.
Yes, that would have been the time of the currency reform.
That's right.
Would it have been, yeah, which just before the Berlin airlift?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we got care packets, these care packets from the Americans. You see, we were, especially people with small children, and they.
That would be after the war.
That was during the war. Yes. Yes. Could it have been during the war? No, it couldn't have been during the war. No, it couldn't have been during the war. That was after the war. That was after the war. So where did we get our food from? Well, I think the shop, we got some foods from the shop, but as I said, sweets and barley, and since we didn't have a garden, we didn't grow anything, you see. I think the farmers became incredibly rich because they used to barter jewellery. I mean, this is part of my grandmother, you know, my grandmother's thing, that she used to get some butter and things sometimes, you know, because farmers used to come into town.
Yeah. It was so interesting when you were saying this absence of men, the
yes.
total absence
yes.
of men,
yes.
must have meant that there were a lot of single parent families in the war.
Definitely. All the women were on their own, you know. We had nobody in the house. There was not a man in the house. Everybody was gone, including grandfather. You see, towards the end of the war, many were killed, and they were desperate. And there's another thing I remember. I witnessed on a schoolyard where they had, do you know these, they call them Panzerfaust in German. They are anti-tank guns. That's right, anti-tank guns. And they instructed kids of 14, 15, and old men, really old men, in the use of these anti-tank guns, because they were desperate for recruitment. But there wasn't anybody left. You know, there were some soldiers in the barracks, and you met them in the woods sometimes at night, when we had to flee from the house because we thought we might get bombed. After all, we only had a cellar; we didn't have a reinforced bunker.